Okay, gentlemen, you guys have the privilege of hearing here on the parasha every week from a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a wise man, a well-known both lecturer and author, Rav Ari Kahn Shlita. I encourage you to take full advantage of the opportunity every day possible, and I want to thank Rav Ari Kahn for taking of his time to be able to share his beautiful Torah with Talmidim of Shalom. Thank you very much.
Okay. Unfortunately, we're starting a book in the middle. So I know that you think you can just jump in the middle and understand everything, but it doesn't always work that way. So look, I'm going to start with some really simple points, and then we'll see how we could proceed. What's the name of the book? Dvarim. Excellent. And what do Chazal call it? Mishneh Torah. Okay. And why do Chazal call it Mishneh Torah? Good. It's a review of the other four books of the Torah. Excellent. Is that true or not? Mostly. Okay, good, good. When it reviews the narrative or reviews the mitzvahs? Mitzvahs, good. So are you willing to do a statistical study for me and tell me of the 613 commandments, how many are repeated? Good. And if you were to do such a study, what would you find? Are there any new mitzvahs?
Seemingly,
yes. The answer is yes, there are new ones. And how many of the old ones are repeated? Not all that many. Which is just a little bit of a problem that you want to call it Mishneh Torah. So, anybody who wants to go and check any of this off, then please, and if you want to correct me, I'd be happy to be corrected, but it just simply doesn't go through all of the mitzvahs. And I know why you'd get confused, because it's called Mishneh Torah. Deuteronomy, Mishneh Torah. It's a repetition of the law. And therefore, the name Deuteronomy, which is Mishneh Torah, doesn't really work, because it's not real. See, that's the problem. Problem is, what does the word Torah mean? Let's start all over again. Okay, what is Sefer Devarim about? And those of you who have no idea probably have a big advantage right now. So good, right? So what is the Sefer about? So you're going to tell me what's about repeating the laws? Okay, in Parshas Devarim, how many laws were repeated? Beschanan. Actually, we found some really new ones, good ones. Shema, like it's top 10, which is there. Akev, we also have Shema and a couple others, important ones, but Shema is not repeated. Shema wasn't there before. Bahaya wasn't there before. There are some things in Beschanan that are repeated. Most importantly, the Aseret HaDibros. Now, that's important. So that's actually very important. Excuse me? With some changes. So, see, that's important. Chazal very often will tell us things like God created the Torah before the world, or God offered the Torah to other nations and all. In all of those Midrashim, if I'm not mistaken, and Gemarot, all of them, when it refers to the Torah, it always refers to the Aseret HaDibros, so not to the rest, and not to the Taryag Mitzvahs. It just happened. You remember like some of the Midrashim? You remember that God says, okay, what does it say there? It says, don't steal, right? So what does it say? Don't commit adultery. What does it say? Don't murder. Aseret HaDibros. Moshe to the angels. Okay, were you slaves in Egypt? Something from Aseret HaDibros. So, which is interesting because it always seems to be this focus on the Aseret HaDibros, on the Ten Commandments. So the Ten Commandments are repeated. So if I'm going to therefore have a really myopic perspective, I'll say, yeah, the repetition of the Torah because the Aseret HaDibros are repeated. But none of you really like that, do you? Actually, the narrative, well, see, let's start all over again. If you were to ask me, and none of you did, but if you were to ask me, because when I asked you the question, you could have said, well, what do you think? Yes? You already laughing? That may or may not have been a clever thing to do instead of trying to answer. But if you ask me what I think, then I would say that it's really interesting where it begins. It begins almost immediately with first major issue that it deals with, major, because you can play with me with minor points. The first major issue it deals with is the sin of the spies. will eventually get to the sin of the golden calf. It will talk about the problem of Avodah Zarah an incredible amount of times. Actually, can we start all over again? What is the book of Devarim really about? Tochacha. The whole book is Tochacha. Okay, can you focus the Tochacha then? Good. So, but focus the Tochacha. It's focused. It's focused. Like your parents, I can already tell, probably warned you about a lot of things, right? But no, so do they warn you about everything, or is it focused?
Preparation.
Oh. Yeah. It's a Zionist book. I apologize for saying that. Sefer Devarim is a Zionist book. The whole book is about going to Eretz Yisrael. The whole book is about conditions of living in Eretz Yisrael. It's about what's going to happen if you don't follow these things and you can't stay in Eretz Yisrael. That's what the whole book is about. And it's true. I liked what you said. What's your name? I liked what you said. It is Tochacha. It is a warning going on. If you really think about it, all of the narrative that he's going over, all the things that Moshe's repeating, is because he's giving them Tochacha, he is rebuking them, he is telling them, if you guys are not careful, the mistakes that you've made in the past, if they're repeated, it's going to have terrible consequences, but the consequence becomes very, very clear, very, very quickly, and repeated many, many times, and that is that you're not going to stay in the lands of Israel a very long time, or you will eventually be kicked out of the lands of Israel. But the land of Israel is absolutely the major focus of Sefer Devarim. You know, even take something like Shema. You all know Shema by heart. Yes. Yes. What's the pasuk before? Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll read it from the beginning of the perek. Perek Vav. Vizot HaMitzvah or Vizos HaMitzvah? Which one? How am I reading? Vizot. Rav Lichtenstein, if he was speaking in English, would read the Hebrew in Ashkenazis. If he was speaking in Hebrew, he would say it in Sephardic. Don't ask me why. That's what he did. V'zot ha-mitzvah ha-chukim v'mishpatim ha-shitziva Hashem al-keichem l'med otchem la'asot ba'aretz Hashem ha-dorim shama l'rishta. These are the laws that you should keep when you can cross over and go in the land to inherit it. And you know what? You'll probably find verses like this more than a dozen. That's Pasuk Aleph, Bet. L'man tirat Hashem al-keichem l'shmort kol chukotav u'mitzvotav asher anochi mitzavecha So listen to this land, you listen to this law, you can inherit the land, go into this place that flows of milk and honey. What's the next verse? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Even the Shema, which you would say, no, this is one of the major principles of Judaism, it's incredibly land-based. Second parasha of Shema, Vahayom Shemoa, is also very land-based. Do I have to convince you of that? Just think about the pshat, about the words that you're really saying. I'm not going to belabor this point or overstate this point or turn this whole thing into a Zionist manifesto, because Moshe already did. So you don't need me to go any further than that. But that's what Sefer Devarim is about. Now, as much as that's what the topic is, I do want to think a little bit. Because, again, it really would be far more interesting if you would take me up on this and go through all of Devarim and analyze. I'm sure you can Google it. Somebody had a lot of time in their hands did this. Analyze which mitzvot are repeated. But it's actually, in my mind, a more important question. Not just which mitzvot are repeated. Which narratives are repeated. Which stories are being told over. Because as far as I can tell, the stories, I hate to say, are more important, but I think that's a larger content of Moshe's speech, is the narrative, more so than just the laws being said. Which means when it's Mishneh Torah, it's because he's repeating Har Sinai. He's telling what happened by Har Sinai, and that happens multiple times. The Rav once explained that the necessity for not just the repetition of Har Sinai, but for a recreation of a Sinai experience, listen, you'll be able to use this many times, this Torah, is because at Har Sinai, they were a bunch of individuals. They did not become a nation to a full extent until they cross over the Jordan and enter into the land of Israel, Eretz Israel. The Rashi tells us a couple times in Devarim, he'll talk about Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh L'Zeh, that doesn't happen until they cross over. There is something which is lacking in terms of peoplehood until they become a nation. Yeah. This is very hard to figure such a thing out. When does the Jewish nation begin? Who's the first Jew? Was Avram Jewish? Was he not Jewish? Just say Machloket. There's a book called the Parshat Drachim, Mishnah Melech wrote. Whole first essay is about that question. Were the Avot considered Jewish or not Jewish? Were they Yisrael or were they considered to be very nice? Yeah, well, he'll bring Nafkamin out here and there. Yeah. And more than that. And now you can become an Am. You can become an Am. It says that by Har Sinai. Yeah, it says you can become an Am. The issue is that part of nationhood, and this really gets into political theory as well, part of nationhood is land-based. A religion is not land-based necessarily, but part of nationhood is. Today you can become a people. Being a people, part of being a people is having your nation as well. It's having your land as well. 100%. Nonetheless. Yeah, 100%. But nonetheless, there was a change that took place, which means this thing about arvut or arvus is very important on this issue. See, you go to the second parasha of Shema, it talks about rain, right? If you follow the laws, it's going to rain. You don't follow, it's not going to rain. Meaning, this is not the same thing as investing in the stock market. My stock goes up and your stock goes down. If it rains in the whole neighborhood. If it rains, it's going to rain in this whole place. Either all of our crops are going to grow or it's not going to grow. There is this, our futures are bound together, and that's part of being in the land. That's part of mutual responsibility, and that's part of this halacha as well. And this is a halacha. It's not just, yes, the nafkamina. Again, why would Rashi, I'll tell you based upon the Rishonim in Rosh Hashanah. If I said Kiddush, and somebody walks in my house and hasn't heard Kiddush yet, can I say Kiddush again? Yes. Why? Okay. Good. But why can I say it again? Why isn't this a bracha levatala? I already said Kiddush. I already yotzei Kiddush. So the Ran says that if one Jew didn't hear Kiddush yet, then I did not fulfill my obligation completely. The concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh L'Zeh means that your fulfillment of commandments is part of my fulfillment of commandments. But I'm going to stress something. That doesn't happen until they cross over the Jordan. Which means theoretically, you want an afkamini, theoretically, by Har Sinai the next day, right? Zochar, Yom HaShabbos L'Kadosh, they have to make Kiddush. So somebody says, oh, you already said Kiddush, you can't say it again. I'm just saying that happens to be the nafkamin if you follow through Rashi and follow through the Ran, but I think it's much more than a small technical halachic issue. It's this large issue in terms of we needed to accept the Torah as individuals and we need to accept the Torah as a nation, but when you accept it as a nation, then there are just much more consequences in terms of our inter-responsibility, because then things that you do or things that you don't do are my problem. And if we're just a bunch of individuals, then each individual has obligations. But as I'm saying, it's not exactly the same. Okay, last week, yeah.
So that's why it's focused on the land.
Yes. Now, last week, something, okay, what was last week's parasha about? Or I can rephrase this. So again, you can use this multiple times during the year. Last week at the very end, there's a parasha of the holidays, right? So there's a parasha of holidays in Re'eh. There's also one in Emor. And there's also one in Mishpatim is small. In Pinchas. Small, very small. But it's true. You have in Shemot, you have Vayikra, but Midvar. In Vayikra, you'd have to look which. And by the way, each time holidays are listed, you need to just pay attention to a couple things. Where it starts, where it ends, what includes, what it doesn't include. Okay, I'm going to say that again, the last part. What it doesn't include. One of the things that I'm going to hopefully It's okay, most of you, well, not some, some of you won't be here next week, and the week afterwards we'll go down a number, right? It's okay. But one of the things that I want you to do is to learn how to think as well. And part of learning how to thinking is to start to think in a way that maybe you haven't thought before. One of the really important questions to ask is sometimes, okay, what should come next? I'll say this a little differently. What should be included, right? What's not included? What is there and what's not there? I know that may not have been all that clear, but I'm going to say, I'm just going to give you an example of this. Every time I have a list of holidays, I want to know where it starts, where it ends, what's included, what's excluded. So, for example, in Emor, the list of holidays is very different than the list of holidays in Pinchas, and the list of holidays in Pinchas is different from the list of holidays in Re'eh. So what's the difference? What's the difference between the various lists? And once I know what's included, what's not included, where it starts, where it ends, I'm then going to understand what really is the essence of what this is about. So, for example, Rosh Chodesh. Is Rosh Chodesh in... You don't have to answer now. Is it in Emor? Is it in Pinchas? Is it in Re'eh? So which one of them has Rosh Chodesh? Which one doesn't have Rosh Chodesh? And not having Rosh Chodesh is actually going to be very instructive. Do any of us actually know the answer to this? And by the way, did that seem like a terrible question to ask? I have a list of holidays, and I'm picking Rosh Chodesh on purpose, because it's a really good example. Which one includes it, which doesn't include it? When is Shabbos or Shabbat included? When is it not included? That's also interesting where it may not include it. Because if it includes Shabbat in the list, then we're talking about something which may have to do with work or not work. If I include Rosh Chodesh, which you're allowed to work, then it's going to be a list of korbanot. It's actually last week's parsha. The list of holidays which are there does not have Shabbat and does not have Rosh Chodesh. It only has the Shalosh Regalim. Why? Because it's what's in common with the Shalosh Regalim versus the other possible days, versus Rosh Hashanah, versus Yom Kippur, versus Rosh Chodesh, versus Shabbat? Aliyah LeRegel. Perfect. Which means, what's the focus of last week's parsha? No. Almost. What's the focus of... All of last week's parsha was about one point. And what was that point? It was about Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. It was about the Beit HaMikdash. That was last week's parsha. Which meant now we have a little bit of a concept of the book. We have a little bit of a concept of what we're up to. We ended last week's parsha with the Shalosh Regalim, Aliyah LeRegel, and we start this week's parsha with Parshat Shoftim, and it begins, Shoftim v'shotrim, sorry, we'll find this, we'll read. Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol sha'arecha, asher Hashem alakecha noten lecha l'shvatecha, v'shoftim ta'am mishpat tzedek. So this is actually the opposite of what we just now had in terms of last week's parsha. What's the opposite? But by the way, opposites are also included in the same topic. Okay, I have to say that again because that wasn't clear enough to you. When you have things which are opposite from one another, it means it's still included. I'll tell you what I mean by this. One of the things of last week was what's called basar ta'ava. What is that? You want to eat meat. How is it framed? It's framed when you're going to live far away from the Beit HaMikdash and you're going to want to eat meat. Okay, just stop right there. So, is that a Beit HaMikdash topic? Of course it is. Why am I saying that? Because the Beit HaMikdash was a place that you go and you bring a korban. What's a korban? A korban is a holy way of eating meat. So now it's brought up a topic that we did not know about till this very point. What if I want to eat meat and I'm not in the Beit HaMikdash? And that's what it says. If I live far away and I want to eat meat, it actually says something which to my mind is remarkable. And if you didn't notice it, then I want you to go back and read the Pesukim and you'll see it really says what I'm about to tell you. Are you allowed to eat blood? Why not? So you tell me because. It's a very good answer. Why can't you eat it? Because it's not kosher. So now I'm going to ask you again, why can't we eat meat, as far as what last week's parasha actually said? But now the only thing is you could get mad at me and say, it didn't say that. So that's part of what we have to learn, how to read between the lines, because it did say this. Why can't you eat meat? Sorry, why can't you eat blood? What? Right, but why can't you eat blood? Because God says you can't eat blood. What does it say you should do with the blood? Spit it on the ground. What would you do with the blood in the Beit HaMikdash? The blood was sprinkled. The blood was part of the Avodah. Which means if you're now you're eating something which is non-kudshim, you have a problem. What do you do with the blood? So what do you do with the blood which is part of kudshim? What do you do with the blood which, if you were in the Beit HaMikdash, you were to put it on the Mizbeach, what do you do with the blood now? Okay, you take the blood and you have to throw it on the ground. Why? Because that's still part of the world of kudshim. I'm not... What I just now said, you're going to say, yes, you understood what I just now said? I'm claiming that the Isser of blood and Chelev, okay, I just went further, I'm claiming that the Isser of blood and Chelev, fat and blood that you can't eat, why? You can eat a kosher animal, why can't I eat the blood, why can't I eat the fat? Because it's part of kudshim. Because when you would bring a korban, that's the stuff that would be put, sprinkled on or put burnt on the Mizbeach itself. And now the God is saying, okay, you can eat meat, but again, context. You can eat meat when you're far away from the Beit HaMikdash. You can eat meat, but the blood you throw on the ground and the fat you throw on the ground. So you see what I'm saying right now? Is that the topic last week was the Beit HaMikdash. Now I moved from the Beit HaMikdash. Certain things are going to happen. Over here when it says, Shoftim v'shoftim tehem l'cha b'chol sha'arecha, you should be putting judges in all of your gates. Now what does all of your gates mean? It means in all places as opposed to only the Beit HaMikdash. Because again, that's where we're coming from. Where did we end up last week? We ended up last week when you make Aliyah L'Regel and you come up to the one place. Shalosh pamim b'shana yireh kol zuchot p'nei Hashem Elokecha b'makom asher yivchar. Okay. Any of you ever heard this great Dvar Torah that what does it mean? Shoftim v'shoftim tehem l'chol sha'arecha, that you have to guard your eyes and guard your ears and guard your... Yes? You've never heard such a thing. Kol sha'arecha means all the place that stimuli can come in. You need to guard all of those places. And first of all, it's a wonderful Elul Dvar Torah. I believe it goes back to the Arizal. But it's very, very far from Pshat. I'm sorry for saying that, because it has nothing to do with Pshat. What's Pshat? Pshat is when you enter into the land, you're going to need shoftim and shotrim. You're going to enter into the land, you're going to need judges. You're going to need police. You're going to need there to be proper... How should we put this? We need law to be implemented. Okay, let's stop for a second. All of you who've grown up, and I'm making an assumption now, because you can correct me if you like. All of us who have grown up in modern Orthodox communities, there is like a cynical line that people use again and again and again, and it's like a total non sequitur, and it gets thrown into all kinds of things, because normal people in the world say, well, that's a slippery slope. Right? What does it mean when it's a slippery slope? Is that you're, or you say, slippery slope, you're getting really far from where I started. So the way that religious Jews always use this is, oh, it could lead to mixed dancing. Because none of us know about slippery slopes. We only know about mixed dancing. Are any of you intrigued where that actually came from? If no, then just say no. And if you are, then tell me and I'll say yes.
Yes.
Yes. So, it was the understanding, based on Gemara, certainly in Rishonim, definitely in Achronim, based upon the end of last week's Parsha, leading to the beginning of this week's Parsha. Where did we end up last week? It's one of the Shalosh Regalim. Pesach, with most of us, is not really happy, right? Unless you're in a hotel. Like, I'm kidding. Even then, people are complaining. People think preparing for Pesach means packing. But okay. But you know what? Maybe it's very authentic. It's what the Jews did in Egypt, right? They packed. Shavuot, Sukkot, these were happy times. And it says it. But Yita'ach Sameach, you're going to go up and you're going to celebrate, be happy in Jerusalem. Now, what does happiness mean? Ein simcha ela... Okay, basar v'yayin. Okay, ein simcha l'basar is v'yayin. That means the simcha is involved in the korbanot. The simcha is involved in the wine as well, and therefore people were eating and drinking on the holidays. So, what happens when people eat and drink? They make mistakes. Well done. Which means it's a wonderful recipe. So the Rambam, in the laws, right, of the holidays, the Rambam speaks about a tznius patrol, tznius police. Why? He says on the holidays, especially where people are eating and drinking and happy and so on, you need... Now, where is this coming from? It's coming from this connection between the end of last week's parsha and the beginning of this week's parsha. You end and then you need shoftim and shotrim. Why need shoftim and shotrim? We'll just follow what we were up to. By the way, everything I'm saying right now is halacha but not pshat. I don't know what to do. Yes, did that make any sense? That it's halacha but it's not pshat? It's halacha because such laws are actually written in the Rambam, actually written in the Shulchan Aruch. Why do I say it's not pshat? Because it's not really pshat in the psukim over here. Because the psukim over here really ended last week, and you go up, you make aliyah l'regel, and now, but listen, we also need to be judges, not just for one day a year, not for the holidays, you need judges all the time, but sort of this flow of the text created this understanding that this consideration of judges somehow directly follows this. If you look in the Mishnah Brura and the Bir Halacha, Shin Lamed Tet, there he'll quote Rabbi Akiva Eger in the Bir Halacha, who will in turn quote a Rabbi Sternbach, who lived in Sternbach, who has a whole tshuva about the terrible thing that during the holidays they're eating and drinking and dancing, but he says that people starting dancing can end up leading to mixed dancing. No, he says this. And Rav Akiva Eger says, take a look over there, because it's, I believe, maybe the Ber Hativ quotes him as well, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes him as well. But what was the consideration? It wasn't just, oh, this can lead to mixed dancing. It was in a much broader context. What was the context? You're happy. You're celebrating. You're eating. Much more importantly, you're drinking. And you're dancing. And then sort of things get out of control. And by the way, I find it really interesting that somebody who lived 200 years ago is writing about this, right? Because you think, oh, this is just people complaining about today. He's writing about this. But this is how he understood Shoftim and Shotrim immediately having followed. Excuse me? But this is really... I'm going to say this again. It's the imaginary source, because what I just now did is I didn't tell you pshat and what the psukim actually mean, but it's this imaginary understanding of how one needs to be really, really careful. Again, just think about the way that the Arizal took it. Be careful to guard your eyes, guard your ears, guard all the places of stimuli, because, again, I'm saying that's an El Dvar Torah, how you have to be very, very careful. But this understanding that this follows what we had last week and this kind of a flow is something which has to do with, I would say, a deep level of a religious personality, religious sensibility, even though, I'm going to say it again, I did not tell you anything which was pshat over here. Rather, the pshat takes us in a different way, and we'll see how much time, we don't have all that much time, because I know that the food is really good here, and you have to get there on time. It's really funny, the food's not good, but you have to get there on time. What if you have time? Who knows? Anyway... But I know the most important thing is ending on time. So I'm just going to throw out a couple of more issues that need to be addressed. This week's parasha, actually, there is a shift from last week. As much as last week, the focus really was on Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. Again, that's all you need to remember, right? The mnemonic, you want to remember. What was Parsha Re'eh about? Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. It's about the Beit HaMikdash. And then you'd have to work, sometimes easier, most of the time easier, some a little harder, to make everything fit in. This week's parsha is about other issues. It's about other leadership issues. It's about other issues of becoming a country. That's why I had the whole introduction of going to the land of Israel. What do we have over here? We're going to have a judge system, a system of courts in all kinds of places. What else are we going to have in this week's parsha? A system of, how shall we put this? A Beit Din Hagadol, or what would later became known as the Sanhedrin. The Supreme Court is going to be mentioned in this week's parsha. What else is going to be mentioned in this week's parsha? A king is going to be mentioned in this week's parsha. Which means, are there other laws over here? Yes. But really what this whole parsha is about is creating a country which has all of these elements. And I want to go back. I started with a Zionist diatribe, so I'm going to end with one as well. Okay. One, there are people, most of them Israelis, but I'm sure, listen, I've been living here a long time. So I don't know what goes on in your minds back there. But there are a lot of people here who will say, listen, we liberated Jerusalem. We liberated the Har HaBayit. By the way, that's a fantasy. We really haven't. But we've liberated Jerusalem, so why should we fast on Tisha B'Av anymore? What's there possibly to fast about? So let's just pause there for a second. Aside from the political issues involved, do we really have Har HaBayit or not? Do you realize that if we had a Sanhedrin today, a real Sanhedrin today, that decided law, there would be no such thing as, well, my rabbi says this is kosher, and this rabbi says that's kosher. All that disappears. It's kosher or not kosher. That's it. Why? Sanhedrin said, that's the halacha. Which means we have a lack of ability of creating clear, absolute law. Why? Because every rabbi can paskin, and as we've seen as well, you don't even need to be a rabbi. You just need a blog. You don't even need a blog. You just need a Twitter account. You can paskin anything that you want. All they need is some fool to follow you, which apparently is really easy. So you had one standard and one set law, and everybody followed that. Do you realize how much machlok we have? You need to think about it. Oh, temples destroyed because of sinat chinam. How are we ever going to get to a point of uniformity? Oh, it's very easy. If you had a Sanhedrin, then everybody has the same standards. Everybody has the same standards. You take away a lot of the area of machloket. So I'm just pointing out is that if you ask me, part of what Tisha B'Av is about, not just the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, it is the fact that the Sanhedrin went into exile and no longer had the authority. They no longer can do things that a Sanhedrin needed to do. That's part of what this week's parasha is about. So on the one hand, we have the judges in all the places, in all the cities, all the local courts. On the other hand, you had a Sanhedrin that was creating laws. But then you also have something else just called the king. Now, that's a whole other topic, which I'm not going to do justice to right now. And that is, are we supposed to have a king or not supposed to have a king? Is having a king a good thing? Is having a king a bad thing? And the Abarbanel gets a lot of credit for going in one direction on this. What you need to do this properly is just read a couple of psukim here and read a couple of psukim when it talks about Shmuel Hanavi and to see exactly what it says and what it doesn't say over there. But I want to point out a Rambam. The Rambam is found, of all places, you would not have guessed this unless you know what I'm going to say. When I was in the Rav Shir, there's actually one guy, I had mentioned to Rabbi Wax before the Shir, every time the Rav would say a topic, he would open up two Rambams and a Gemara. And 20 minutes later, the Rav would say, oh, there's this, and he would hand him the Rambam. And then he would say, oh, there's a Gemara, and he would hand him the Gemara. So he knew before, he just said the topic, and he knew what he was going to say. We want to tell you who it was afterwards. So the Rambam, in the laws of Hanukkah, it's actually Megillah and Hanukkah, when he talks about why we have a holiday of Hanukkah, do you know what he says? Because I just want you to think a second. All of you know that there were two miracles. One miracle that we had was the miracle of the lights. The other miracle was the military victory. The Gemara goes out of its way to tell you that the military victory is unimportant and the whole thing of my Hanukkah, right? When we went and when we were victorious, we went in and we didn't have enough oil and then it lasted for 8 days. That's what Hanukkah is. So the Gemara goes out of its way to tell you that the whole thing about Hanukkah is the miracle. And there's a lot to talk about that, what it represents, the Shechina, and so on and so forth. The Rambam writes, do I need to translate everything? You'll tell me if I do. And he tells all the problems. So God saved us. There was salvation. Those of you know the Ramban in Parshat Vayechi, the fact that the Chashmonaim held on to the Malchut was considered to be a terrible sin. Which is a sin, according to the Ramban, and maybe even to the Rambam. V'chazru malchut liYisrael yeter matayim shana ad churban hasheni. Is that why do we have Hanukkah? Because we were able to appoint a king and we had sovereignty for 250 years. So I just want to pause for a second. The kings, and there's a little secret if you don't know this, the kings during Bayit Sheni were terrible sinners. That was the time you could buy, if you were a Kohen, you can buy to become a Kohen Gadol. These kings were sinners and they were terrible. And the Rambam says we have a holiday because we had these terrible people as kings. You know why? Because it's better to have bad Jewish kings than to live under the Tsar or to live under every other situation that we've lived in. To have your own determination, have your own sovereignty. Which means if you think about Malchei Yisrael throughout the Navi, I can assure you that every prime minister we've ever had in modern Israel has been better, more moral, more decent than the Malchei Yisrael that we had throughout by Rishon. The kings that we have in Bayit Sheni, every prime minister as well has been better than what we had at that point. And you can say, how can I say such a thing? But I'm saying something, I'm saying much more than that. The Rambam is telling you, for those kings of Bayit Sheni, we created a holiday called Hanukkah because we ended up having sovereignty. So I'm going to go back a second. Having this whole parsha over this whole book, entering the land of Israel. Most of the book is rebuke, is musr that Moshe gives us in order to be able to stay in the land. Last week we learned about a new idea, a new concept, Makom Hashem Yivchar Hashem, the Beit HaMikdash. This week we started about everything else. All the other institutions. The institution of the court system, institution of the Supreme Court, institution of the king. Why? Because we have to create a country. And the country may be very, very imperfect, but just think a second. If you lose it, and then you get it back, we have Hanukkah. If anybody ever tells you, well, how in the world can they make up Yom HaTzma'ut? Just say, you know what, they should have made an 8-day holiday, because that's what they did in the time of Chazal.